Welcome to the Motivate Me Book Club. We read and challenge books to motivate us. Follow along as we uncover what may or may not work from these books, provide tools and resources for your goals, and interview people who have found a path to success through their reading. Join us to kick ass at achieving your goals faster and easier than before, one book at a time. Motivate Me Book Club is here to motivate you. Hey everybody, how is it going? Oh man, all right, so we are back in action. I have my voice, as you could tell, it's back to being 100%. So thank you for bearing with me as I took a little bit of time off to recuperate. Times have been great. It's always been super busy, but you know, that's all self-made. I moved to a different location, and that's where we are currently recording the Motivate Me Book Club podcast from, just a mile down the road and a little bit closer to the beach. And after passing my real estate exam, which was super amazing, I ended up getting sick and losing my voice, but it gave me time to just decompress, soak it all in, and now move on and move forward. And also, it helped allow me some time to really give Atomic Habits by James Clear some proper attention. Because now that it's done, we can do the high-level overview of his book. How many of you have read it? How many of you ended up finishing this book yourself and really getting into it? What kind of things have you extracted? What do you want to apply? If you're not there, if you're still thinking about what it is that you could be using, this could be the episode that helps motivate you to read it, or at least to apply some of the concepts that we present here. Now, in no means is this meant to replace reading or getting an audiobook version, because we want people to give these books a chance. However, this is about the real general concepts that are being presented and how they can work for us. All right, well, getting into it. James Clear builds on books that we have already read for this book club and others that we haven't, but he ties these similar concepts together into a newer framework. What he is presenting are how there are ways to build good habits and to break bad ones in a simple approach of looking at how tiny daily changes are the ways that we make remarkable results. All right, does that sound familiar to anybody? That's kind of like the one thing about the domino effect, how we, if we keep working on one thing over and over and over, there is going to be a point when we push that domino over and it sends everything else into play. Well, this is about how we work on that one thing. This is about changing that little 1%, how to actually do it. If you're having trouble changing your habits, the problem isn't actually you. The problem is the system you have in place. Bad habits repeat themselves, not because you don't want to change or don't have the willpower, but James Clear says it's because there's a wrong system for change in place. We do not rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. So Atomic Habits is giving us a plan that'll take us to newer and different and more successful heights. He starts by going into the habit loop, which, if you recall, was introduced by Charles Duhigg in The Power of Habit. And he gives him credit and acknowledgement where it's due, because Charles Duhigg really did get into the science of how habits form within us in our neurological pathways, and that they cannot be broken, that they can only be transformed. So this area is really great. It's a smaller chapter than the entire book of The Power of Habit. So if you really want some expansion and understanding on that, I definitely recommend Power of Habit. But what he does illustrate through visuals and other areas and with actual diagrams is how the habit loop works. So it's a four-step process, starting with a cue, some kind of point at which a craving out of you is elicited so that you act and behave in a certain way because you want something from this situation. So the four steps are cue, craving, response, reward. And when all of that is satisfied, you are likely to repeat that exact loop again when the exact same cue occurs in the future. But then he introduces is the four laws to change habits. This is to acquire and to remove bad habits that you have. So acquire good ones and remove bad ones. And each of the laws pertains to one of these specific steps in the habit loop. The first law is make it obvious or invisible. The second law is make it attractive or unattractive. The third one is make it easy or make it difficult. And the fourth one is make it satisfying or make it unsatisfying. This is like what we heard from Lindsay Tobias a couple of weeks ago. Great guest about how she's applied Atomic Habits to her own industry of nutrition and health coaching. But this is something that I want to delve into a little bit deeper and expand upon, because each one of these areas is part of the system, but there are sub layers to it that help make this system work. Again, what we're trying to do are make small, tiny changes so that they build upon each other over time. What is crazy is this paradox that was put forward by James Clear called the Sorites Paradox. And I looked into it a little bit deeper because I was just like thinking about how it's this ambiguity in language that we have about the point at which something is going to be something else. So that one by itself is not, but multiple are, and at what point is it now different? Okay, what am I talking about? I'm talking about change. What point at which did our habits collect up to then become a new or good habit? So the Sorites Paradox would be such like, if you were trying to become rich, you would say that one coin alone in front of you does not make you a rich person. But if you add a quarter every day in front of that one that you already have, over time, you will accumulate a whole bunch of quarters, and there is going to be in 50 years enough to say, yes, you are a rich person. But not necessarily was it that one coin that did it at some point, but over time, the accumulation has now transformed you. And let's be honest, it's not necessarily a quarter. It would have been better if I started with a $100 bill in front of you and then acquired over time a $100 bill every day. Yeah, that would make you feel a little bit more rich in 50 years from now, if that was something that could happen. But what $100 bill was it? Was it the one 27 years later that just all of a sudden from one day to the next? No, it's about continuously adding so that it just keeps going. So the paradox is explained once we define ourselves, and that's where we create an identity. We need to live into being the person that has the habits or doesn't have the habits that we are wanting to change. If we associate ourselves as being healthy, then if our habit that we are trying to form is running, we will say a healthy person runs, therefore I run. But then if you're trying to say, well, a successful person doesn't waste time on the internet or on social media apps, therefore I do not waste time on social media apps or the internet. You see what I'm saying? So it's not so much about how much or little we run or how much or little we are on the social media. It's about how we identify with a type of behavior and keep associating and doing things to reinforce it. Let's dive into each one of these four laws of habit change. Each one relates to a specific step within the habit loop. And James Clear breaks it down so that he gives us a system that will work to make each step very satisfying, very rewarding, and very simple. So the first step, make it obvious or make it invisible, relates to the cue. This is the trigger that elicits the whole habit loop, the response, the craving, the reward, all of that at once. The cue, the trigger, is what we need to either work on associating with a new behavior or to diminish it, to remove it, to even try to get rid of it, make it invisible so that we don't do the bad behaviors associated with it. But regardless, even if that cue were to follow up in the future, what we're trying to do is just transform the way that we work so that we don't do what we may have normally done. We don't want to fall off the wagon, so to speak. So with the first habit change of making it obvious, it sounds pretty obvious. When we listened to Lindsay Tobias, she was talking about going for a run. Well, what would she do? She would put her shoes out right there so that the first thing that she would do would be put on those shoes so that it motivated her to go out for that run. She also talked about putting a glass of water beside her bed. She wanted to drink more water, so if she saw it first thing, she would be more inclined to, because it would trigger her. Hey, there's a glass of water. I should drink more water. There, it's very much the cute is that the visual that she saw. So it's really quite encouraging to think of having our habits obvious to us. But one of the ways that we can make it even easier is to habit stack. So associate something you already do with something that you want to do. If it's about being healthier and trying to put more greens in your diet or supplements or vitamins, one of the things I did for myself in this example is I associated it with my morning drinks. So I have a morning ritual. I always have a tea or a coffee very first thing, and I wanted to make sure I was getting enough vitamins. I've been told by my doctors to have a multivitamin, that I should also try to have more vitamin C to keep my immune system high. So I was like, okay, I know that I'm going to have this morning coffee, my morning caffeine hit, let's be honest, every single day. And so now, as part of my routine, it is tea and vites, or coffee and vits. So it's basically, I know that every time I have my coffee, I will also have my vitamins. And I have probably never skipped this, because even when I go on vacation, I know that I want this. So I have my little baggie of vitamins that I will bring along. Can you think of this for your own life? What's some kind of associative habit stacking that you can do for yourself? We already have habits that are good, so not everything is going to change, but we can bank on them, we can work with them to create these newer ones in our lives. We also want to set ourselves up for success, so having an environment for success is really important. How are you best going to actually, you know, go for a run? Are you going to do it by yourself, or are you going to have it with other people? Are you going to be more inclined to just sit at home and watch TV? Well, what if you kind of hid your TV? What if you didn't have it available to you? Or what if you started showing up to a run club and there's people around you that run just like you, not very often, but just come out for the social aspect? Well, if you kind of create a surrounding that supports this new habit building and that habit that you want to hold, you are going to be more likely to have that. So if you have a cue, which is seeing people running on the street, and then you know that you have your run club, or if you have your shoes, or if you buy yourself a new outfit to wear when you're running, you're definitely going to have more of a trigger to go do so if you are set up for it. Now, with bad habits, we need to try to make them invisible. We need to hide the cue from us if possible. And when it comes to wasting time on our phones for social media or anything that really distracts or kind of helps us procrastinate, we want to try to mitigate that as much as possible. When people with high self-control tend to spend less time in tempting situations. So if it's easier to avoid temptation than to resist it. So don't expose yourself to it. If you have a drinking problem, if that's the kind of habit that you want to break, you can't really sit at the bar when you go to a restaurant. You need to sit further away. It's something as simple as that. Yep, talking to the bartender could be fun, but your waiter might also be really cool too. You have to, if you really believe in this habit that you want to change, you're going to set yourself up for success. And well, self-control is something that you might think can help, but it's not a long-term strategy. So really, 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 you have to remove yourself around the cues that create that environment for a bad habit. I know it's easier said than done, but you're the one who wants to change. So that's where it's a commitment to yourself. So think about what it is you can do on the first habit law for yourself. Well, the second law for habit change is make it attractive or make it unattractive. And this has to do with our craving. All of these things that we currently do are modern day supplements for ancient cravings and survival tactics. If you think about it, it really makes a lot of sense. We do things now because we had to just survive in the past. And so now we have a different kind of approach to it. But cravings are just another biological factor. We would want to conserve energy. We would want to connect and bond with others. We wanted to reduce uncertainty. So if you think about that, what do we do to connect and bond with others? We might go on Facebook or Instagram. We want to reduce our uncertainty. Well, now we search on Google for answers. We don't have to go out and look and find an experiment on our own anymore. So it's interesting how we have these kinds of bad habits, these fixes that we have for them. And the reasons behind it are not excusable, but understandable. But what we could do for both making good, attractive habits and unattractive habits are simple steps, according to James Clear. All right. Well, when it comes to make it attractive, temptation bundling is an interesting way to approach this. And I thought this was really interesting. It's to another strategy of pairing. It's to take an action you want to do with an action you need to do. So after I get my morning coffee, you could have the thing that you need to do, like take your vitamins or take your supplements. And then after you take your supplements, you can then have your reward that you really want, which is to look at your phone. So if you want to put off doing something that might get distracting, but you want to get stuff done in the morning first, so maybe it's like, okay, maybe it's not the morning coffee, maybe it's the run. So maybe it's after I get my morning coffee or tea, I will go for my 5K run. And after I do my 5K run, then I can go on my phone. Also, just you could think of it in a different way. If you really need to get yourself more motivated to move around, to do more exercise, he suggests that if you are going to reach for your phone and go onto any of your social media platforms, what you will first do is 10 push-ups and 10 sit-ups. And then after you do those 10 push-ups and 10 sit-ups, you can then go on Facebook. So temptation bundling is one way that, in anticipation of a reward, not the fulfillment of it, that's what gets us into action. So we are more motivated by the anticipation with a greater dopamine spike than the actual reward itself, which is crazy. So to think about that kind of thing, it's about that wanting to get there, that we are more motivated to do stuff. All right, how can that apply to you? Well, another way is cultural acceptance. Again, it's about surrounding yourself with people that help get you to where you want to go. We want to feel connected. We don't really want to be singular or different, but we imitate the habits of three groups of people around us: the close, the many, and the powerful. And each one offers opportunities to leverage the second law of behavior change, which is to make our habits more attractive. We can imitate the close, we can imitate the many, and we can imitate the powerful. So what we want to do is to join a culture where your desired behavior is the normal behavior, and that you already have something in common with that group. So if it's about networking to build your business, or if it's to become healthy, so you want to join that run club, there is going to be some kind of tribe that you could associate with that helps to bring these better habits out. They will be reinforced by other people who are similar. So think about those that are in your lives and those social groups. The close are your family and friends. The many is that tribe mentality, and the powerful are those that you look up to that have status and prestige. And if you can associate or emulate like some of those folks, you are going to also be reinforced with building these habits that you want. And well, you know, those bad habits are hard. They're very difficult to break that craving for, because there is some underlying desire that is motivating us. So that inversion that we need to do is make it unattractive. But that can seem really difficult when there's some deeper underlying motive. What we want to do is really work on that prediction of feeling. So again, it's in that anticipation that we feel the dopamine spike. But if the anticipation is now more negative, if we don't have such a positive feeling associated with it, it's less likely that we're going to keep moving forward and doing that bad habit if it seems more unattractive. So what you have to do here, James Clear suggests, is create a motivation ritual by doing something you enjoy immediately before a difficult habit. So if there's something that's a little bit more of a challenge for you, you have to do those things in order to get those other things. The key to finding and fixing the causes of your bad habits is to reframe the associations you have about them. It's not easy, but if you can reprogram your predictions, you can transform a hard habit into an attractive one, and vice versa. So this is really interesting, because I think that we all have bad habits, and to make it unattractive is probably the most difficult thing, because right now they are attractive to us, even if they aren't good for us. But when it comes to going on your phone and maybe with your social media, maybe making note of how much time you're spending doing this. I know that our phones have the ability to generate reports now and actually tell us how long we spent on Instagram, Facebook, social media, anything that, you know, could be seen as not being really productive, but wasting your time. So maybe whenever you go on a social media thing, you have to check in and see exactly how much time you spent and actually look at your reports and track that. I know that doesn't really sound like a lot of fun, but maybe that's what you have to do in order to be more mindful about how much time you're spending on this bad habit, especially if it's because you want to get rid of it. I know that time management is something that everybody wants to work on. Maybe it's how much time you spend just flipping through your emails, going through and responding and saving some for later, but then going back and checking again and not really doing much. All this time could be used somewhere else, something more productive. Maybe it could be meditating. Maybe it could be stretching. Maybe it could be messaging your friends or giving them a phone call and actually feeling connected and bonded. So when it comes to the actual utilization or the doing of emails and not really emails at the same time, how about looking at how much time you're spending, that you have to report on it every single time? And it almost then makes you feel like you don't want to do it. Oh, well, if I'm going to be on Instagram for 5 minutes and then 10 minutes and then 20 minutes, and then I have to go back and calculate all the time I spent on it today, then I probably just shouldn't go on Instagram in the first place. Maybe there's a way to make the whole thing itself unattractive, because you actually need to then report on what you're doing. Who knows? Is that something that could work? That's something that I'm thinking about potentially doing. But I've even just made not going on Instagram a thing because I don't need to for myself. I just do it for business. And then what I was doing was, if I went on Instagram for business, then I could go on it personally. But then I realized I didn't even want to. So I go in, work on it when I need to, and then leave. And although the logarithms and all those kinds of things don't necessarily work in my favor, I don't really care, because it's not what I really want to do with my time. I want to spend my time doing more productive things. Now we're getting into the actual meat of it. This is about the response, the actual habit, the behavior, the action that comes from all of this. And the third law for habit change is to make it easy or make it difficult, depending on which way you're working on it. A thing about people, and it's a foundational principle in physics, is the principle of least action. It states that the path followed between any two points will always be the path requiring the least energy. This simple principle underpins the law of the universe. From this idea, you can describe the laws of motion and relativity. Now, this is science. You can't even deny it that, yes, everything will follow the path of least resistance. So that includes the way that we work on ourselves, our habits, our lives, everything. We will be a friction-focused individual, whether we are conscious about it or not. So we will try to do things as easy as possible. And when we do that for ourselves intentionally, when we build our habits, we are more likely to do them. So we have to figure out how we can make things, how we can achieve things better with less effort. Well, there just needs to be a little bit of an entry point, right? So we have to get ourselves set up for the future. I talk about this all the time when it comes to stuff that Luke and I do on a regular basis. I love when the moment comes and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in this situation, what do I do? And then I realize past Jen was so much smarter than present Jen. She thought about the future and got me ready for when this could occur. So one of the things that I'm trying to do is, of course, use less plastic everywhere. And that's not just straws, but straws are a big one because of how much they can just be thrown away and tossed, not just into a trash can, but they can fly out of trash cans and onto the ground and then into the waterways. So there's a big problem with trash accumulation in the ocean because all rivers, sewers, everything always leads there in the end. So it doesn't matter where you are, if you're in the middle of a country or if you're on the coast. This is a little bit of me just shouting out my passion for conservation. But I want to make sure that when I'm out and about and if I'm going to drink something that requires a straw, like a smoothie, that I am able to because I have my own. So I will go out and I have got paper straws which decompose or my own metal straws, and I stack our cars full of them so that when we're out and we get this, I'll make sure that I get it in a cup that's recyclable or bring one of my own if I've thought even that far ahead. But at the bare minimum, I have made it easy for me to not use plastic straws because I have my own already. So what you want to do is think in the future of what you're going to need for these habits and what you need to do to be successful. So that is the path of least resistance. How can you reduce the friction associated with good behaviors? Well, procrastination is a big player that helps us stop in our tracks. Procrastinating is something that we can work on by using the 2-minute rule and also by using habit shaping. So I like these two different concepts working together, where when you start a new habit, it should take less than 2 minutes to do. So it's really about breaking everything down to being as easy as it can. And then the whole aspect of habit shaping is that you have phases in which they transform. So it's the first thing about your habit is that maybe you're only run for 2 minutes, but if you don't think that's going to be really realistic is only running for 2 minutes, then it would be you're going to be running for 5 minutes, then 10 minutes, then 20 minutes, then 30 minutes, and so on and so forth. If it's you want to become an early riser, you're going to go to bed early. So you start going to bed at 10, and then if you're once you've hit that on a regular basis, then you're going to work on the other side and you're going to get up at 7, then you're going to get up at 6:45, then you're going to get up at 6:15, then you're going to get up at 5:45, then you're going to get up at 5:30 every day because you've gone to bed now by 10 consistently. You could work on how the other end works by setting your alarm and working slowly. So habit shaping isn't about getting to the final habit right away and starting from there. It's how do you build up to that point? This is almost like exactly the one thing, the domino effect, is that if you can take your bigger goal, that final habit, and break it down into actionable progress and measurable progress in reasonable time, Jim Rohn, if you break it down into something that's a little bit easier to start with, then you can expand and work on it until the final habit is there, and then you have the ability to work on it. Now, this is where I had a light bulb moment, and I'm hoping I'm articulating all of this right, because it is, you cannot try to improve a habit if you don't have it. So it's really, this was my whole habit tracking issue. I wanted to track all of my habits. I wanted to have habits and then track them, and then try to start right away with doing these habits and marking them off every single day. But what I didn't do is set myself up for success. I didn't make it easy. I wasn't even able to get to my habit tracker on a daily basis. And I realized that the bottom line to changing my habits was to first even track them, to get used to a habit tracker, to get used to checking in on a daily basis on myself. So when I realized that that was my 2 minutes or less moment, I was like, okay, then that's got to be my main change, my main effort right now. The one thing is that every day I pull out my habit tracker and I put an X on it saying I used it. And then once I did that, then it shows that I've been on this journey and commitment to tracking habit change. So then now, once I've done that for a little while, I've been able to then look at all the other habits I'm trying to work on and go from there. But even then, some of the ones that I'm having difficulty on, I need to break them down a little bit further and find that 2 minute entry point so that I can build up from there and shape it as I go. How about you? Where can this work for you? Are there things that you can transform? Maybe it's also about shifting your sleeping habits, becoming a vegetarian, exercising, about making more money. All of this can work, but it's this easy / difficult way of approaching it that makes things work. Now, when it comes to the bad habits, you can use the same strategy. It's called the commitment device. When you make choices here in the present that control your actions in the future, this is something that helps you understand your weakness when the time comes, when you want to cave in, but you've set it up that it's going to be difficult to do that bad habit because you already predicted this moment. This is also called the Ulysses Pact or Contract, named after Ulysses from the Odyssey. You might recall he couldn't resist the siren sounds, their enchanting songs. So he anticipated this and told his sailors to tie him to the mast of his ship so that he could not swim out to them, and he wouldn't then be able to steer the ship towards them, that they would be saved because he knew his weakness. So if there is something that you can predict that you're going to do, what kind of block can you put up to stop it? What about, you know, eating food at home? If you know that when you get stressed out, you are likely to grab the chocolate and have it, what if you don't have the chocolate? What if you throw it out? What if you just skip it from keeping it around you? Then when you go to do it, you're like, okay, you know what? I'm going to drink a big glass of water because I just am so stressed out. And you start replacing it with some other kind of habit. Instead of going for that stress eating, you drink water, which is productive. What other kinds of things can you do that helps commit to yourself in the future? Ooh, and this is probably the juiciest part of our habit changing and transformation, is the fourth law of habit change, which is make it satisfying, or conversely, for bad habits, make them unsatisfying. This goes with the reward factor of why we do anything. There is a result, and it all builds up to this. The first three laws of behavior change, make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, are about increasing the odds that a behavior will actually happen. But the fourth law of behavior change, make it satisfying, increases the odds that the behavior will be repeated or not. So if it's not satisfying, then it's less likely to happen again. If that outcome isn't there like it used to be for a bad habit, then we're less likely to do it. But when it comes to good habits and acquisition of things that we want to do for our benefit, the cardinal rule of behavior change: what is immediately rewarded is repeated, what is immediately punished is avoided. So we have to make it stick because we need to make it feel successful. I know this can be hard, and we've talked about this before, that it's about delayed gratification. Most of these habits don't have an immediate return on delivery, right? When we are working out, when we are trying to get to that marathon distance or losing some weight, it doesn't happen overnight. We're not going to have that 10 pounds shed off immediately. We're not going to be able to run 26 miles without getting completely sore and absolutely just, I don't know, questioning life or why would anybody do this. It's because you have to build up to it. But along the way, there needs to be reinforcement. So there is something that you need to do in order to help you get there. So one of the things is that habit tracking does really help it. It makes it attractive because you can have a cool little monthly calendar to work with. It's satisfying because everybody likes to check things off. And it's also very obvious because it's going to be something that you are going to look at and feel good about and actually watch the progress happen. You'll actually see it in a way on a daily basis without maybe the results of it physically happening, if it's something like running greater distances or losing weight. So this is something that can really support you. And if you want your copy of the Goal and Habit Tracker from the Motivate Me Book Club, then please send us an email or a message on social media platforms in order to get it. But make sure that's when you are wanting to be on email and social media platforms and not at a time that is just being wasted by being on it. Come on, use it wisely. So yes, rewarding along the way is really good. Having little things that help, you know, make it feel good while you're getting to that bigger goal is something that you need to recognize. And I think when it comes to measurable progress in reasonable time, again, I love that quote from Jim Rohn, habit tracking really has been one of those ways that have done that for me. And when it comes to it, just bad habits too, you can feel sort of positively reinforced every day you don't do a bad habit by tracking that as well. So every day you get to put a little check or a smiley face when you didn't do that bad habit by also tracking the absence of it. When it comes to also make it unsatisfying, there can also be the habit contract or the habit consequence. So if there is something that you need to be doing, like working out, but you don't, what you can do is then hold yourself accountable and say, for instance, in James Clear's example, if you were going to use the guy that he spoke about, he was an entrepreneur from Nashville, that he wanted to lose weight, and if he didn't go to the gym, he had to give his trainer $200. And so that's a pretty big commitment because you're already paying for your trainer, but it was this accountability factor that if he didn't show up, there had to be a consequence. So if he didn't work out, then he had to give someone else money. Or if he did slipped into bad behaviors, then he would have to pay a price. So you could think about that. It doesn't have to be something monetary, but it does have to be of a consequence that actually values or matters to you. And having an accountability partner can create an immediate cost to an action. So if someone is going to then say not allow you to be part of a social gathering on the weekend because you aren't keeping with your habits all week, that could be a pretty costly price, and that might actually not want to be something that happens. But, you know, as bad as it sounds, wouldn't that motivate you to then keep doing the good side of things, the good habits that are replacing those bad ones? Because yeah, the consequence is too steep. So it has to be pretty valuable to you, but not at an expense. So think of where that middle ground could be, if that can apply to you. those are the four laws of habit change, and I want to end on some takeaway notions because there was a lot of information in this book. Definitely read it or listen to an audio version. I love this book. I think it's so great, and I'm ready to keep applying these concepts moving forward. But there are things that have come up that I've been curious about, and even in the progress that I've made prior to reading this book, there have been things I've identified as areas of weakness. And what happens if you fall off the wagon? What happens if you do miss a day of habits? Well, there could be consequences, like we just heard from the make it unsatisfying of having an accountability partner for it. But if it's about making a good habit and there isn't a consequence rather than you just didn't do it, you have to think about really your commitment to yourself. This is for you. And in the last episode, we talked about never missing twice. Don't break the chain. When it comes to habit tracking, if you miss one day, then make all the effort in the world to stick to it the next day, because that is something that you want. None of this is because someone else is necessarily making you do it. You have the control. It is your commitment, and you do owe it to yourself to try really hard to pick up that little bit of slack that has happened in the meantime. Now, we have to look at the long-term goals, that this isn't going to be happening overnight. This is not about an immediate return. We have to reward ourselves on the journey there, but do have that bigger end goal in mind. Now, the point at which this happens, again, I'm referring back to the last episode, it's really not about the time it takes to form or break a habit. It's the frequency of action that makes automaticity happen. It's about getting into that identity that is of this person with these habits. I am a healthy person, therefore I eat healthy and I run. But it doesn't mean I necessarily run every day. Say you got into this thing where your identity is so rigid. Well, what if something happened and it said, hey, you can't be a vegetarian anymore, you have to eat meat? Would that not just shatter your beliefs and your whole system? Because you now have identified as I'm a healthy person, that means I don't eat meat and I do this. Well, no, we have to be flexible within these identities. So identities will sustain our habits, but they have to be in a way that we do not get boxed in and become inflexible. So think about what you are going to define yourself as in an open way that helps create this habit that supports it for you. So break down the habit to be easy, accessible, build it up from there, and then absorb it into yourself. Now, when it comes to being successful, it is not about failure, about not doing it one day or another. If you get back on and you try and try again, that is awesome. That is the path to success. What is the greatest threat to your success of habits is boredom. When you get so automatic that it becomes so habitual, and then you get bored with it, and then you dislike it, and then you don't want to. But when you can work through it, when you work on those habits with deliberate practice, that's when you get to the level of mastery. So James Clear does talk about professional athletes and how it's those that really persevere through the drills, through the monotonous, repetitive nature of doing these kinds of habits, because they find areas that they can work on above what is already automatic for them to become excellent, to become masters in their fields. So this is really big picture. If you're going to apply your habits to your professional self, to your personal life, to your health, to something that you really want to excel in, this is how it's done. But we can break it down. It's all about that 1% incremental change, that atomic little motion in the right direction that ends up pushing you to these habits that you want to acquire. And the ultimate little level that you want to ride along in the Goldilocks rule is that you want to be at the edge of your current abilities. So as your abilities improve and get higher, you don't want to try to push yourself into deeper challenges at which you can't operate. You want to be always at the forefront edge of where you are and where you can go next. Whew! All right. Well, there you have it. This is just the tipping point. I mean, I'm giving you the iceberg of this book. There is so much more weight and depth below that you can only get by reading and getting into it itself. There's lots of extras, printable downloads that you can get through his website at jamesclear.com, at atomichabits.com. So, my goodness, go out there and explore and figure out if this can work for you. And I'd love to hear if anybody's fired up about this book as much as I am, because I really feel like there's a lot of application here in all regards, and it really has built up on everything that we've read so far. So I can't recommend it enough. Go out, grab Atomic Habits, and we'll see where it goes. Because although we are fired up, I will put this little caveat out there. It still has to go through a challenge day, and we'll have to see how much it really does work in its application down the road. But there you have it, folks, this week's overview of Atomic Habits by James Clear. This has been the Motivate Me Book Club, presented by Pineapple Gin. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Click the subscribe button to get the latest episode as it lands. Leave a rating, review, or comment to help us out, and share with friends the podcast, the book club, or even parts of the books that helped you. Motivate Me Book Club is here to motivate you.